sahana bhavatu, sahanau bhunaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvinavaditamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti.
We did, let's start with Chit Kim on page 32. We did this yesterday, but then I don't think I read it. Right? So, repeat after me. Chit Kim.
Chit Kim.
What is Chit? What is Chit? Chit Kim. Jnana Swarupaha.
Jnana Swarupaha.
Chit is Jnana Swarupaha. Means its very nature is jnana. Here, jnana means consciousness. Its very nature is consciousness. So, in the last class, we went into quite an unfoldment about the nature of Satchit. But what is left out for us is ananda. So today we're going to work on ananda. So, anandaha kaha.
Anandaha kaha.
What is ananda? Sukha swarupaha.
Sukha swarupaha.
The swarupa, the ananda has for its swarupa, sukha. Sukha is pleasure, fullness, happiness. All these words we have to see. We have to recognize what that actually is in reference to the self. All of the words satchit ananda, our definition of all three of these words, existence, consciousness, bliss, or happiness, fullness, all of these words are relative because every word that we have is relative. It means the word exists in time and space. It's a word that we utilize within duality. But when we're talking about the nature of the self, what we have to do is use these words because words, the words that we have are what we have to use. But we have to use them in such a way that they point to something which is free of the limitations of the words that all words have. So, for instance, if you use the word existence, I went into this just a little bit. If I say something exists, you don't think of existence, which is timeless, free from change, and which it itself is a noun. We basically don't even pay attention to the word existence. It's just a word of marking something that we're experiencing. Oh, yeah, that is. We don't think of, you know, existence as a noun. Like sometimes Swamiji will say consciousness existence. I mean, or I'm not using consciousness. Like rug existence, floor existence, window existence, person existence, dog existence. Where you see those words become as though adjectival to existence as the noun. And we've done examples like saying, this is, there is nothing that does not enjoy existence. So what if you looked at everything as kind of an adjective to existence, rather existence being kind of an invisible marker of name and form. So what has to happen in this teaching is that we use the word existence because all of us are very familiar with existence because existence is my being. I exist. I am. All of these things exist. All of them are. But we have to use the words and the teaching methodology in such a way that we can strip off all of the limited meanings of existence and just be with existence itself as an independent being, an independent noun. See what I mean? So not something that is always associated with something else. And so the teaching methodologies have to do that for the sat. I also have to do it for chit, because when I think of chit, of consciousness, I always think of it in terms of knower knowns, myself as a knower. That's one of the first means. Yeah, I'm a conscious being. I know this, I know that. The conscious being as a knower, I am. So the knowership and consciousness are very much interrelated. Then we have other types of ways of using consciousness, like, yeah, I'm very conscious of that. It means I'm aware of that. I'm conscious of that. I've heard about that. I respect that. Yeah, that's in my consciousness. I know. You know, that type of thing. So we have all kinds of different meanings for the word. And so in the prakriyas, the teaching methodologies that we use, even for the sat-chit, which is ever-present, right? There's, it is known, you are, I am, it exists, you know, it exists and it is known. That has its own stability to it. Also, my consciousness has a stability to it. We'll see when we get to Ananda, which is not stable in terms of my own experience of it. Your experience of your own being is stable until you die. You exist. You may be sick, you may be this way or that way, but you still exist. You know, you are a knower, even though your sense organs might be dimming out. Even if you lose them all, then you're aware that you don't have any sense organs. Your mind objectifies that. So that knowership, as long as the mind is there functioning, the buddhi is there, that knowership is there, consciousness is there. You know, so actually even with an Alzheimer's patient, consciousness is very much there. They're just living in a different world. Very, very different world. But they are there. That me is there, you know. So anyway, what I'm saying is for all of these three, the sat, chit, ananda, all three need to, prakriyas, teaching methodologies, need to be used in order to liberate the word from the duality that it exists in, as do all words. And so all of these methodologies are aiming at that, so that you recognize these words as actually the adhishtana. The adhishtana means, you know, that which the mithya totally depends on for its being. The relative meaning of these words have to be liberated so that you can recognize the true nature of the way these words are being used in the teaching. It's not that those ways of using those words are wrong. They're fine within duality, but yourself is not an object within duality. Right? And yet these words have to have the duality peeled off of them. So we've done that pretty well, I think, for now. We'll be circling around, of course, for the whole 3 months that we're here. You know, but so we've done pretty well with the sat-chit. Now it's Ananda's turn. Okay. Ananda. So what is the Ananda? It's a sukha-svarupa. That which, sukha-svarupa, we can say that which is happiness, or that which is pleasurable, or that which is desirable, that which is most desired is Ananda. All of these words, we can say that which is most loved is Ananda. So to think, when you think of Ananda or happiness or fullness, you can think also just in terms of what is most wanted. What is least wanted? I don't want to be unhappy. A prayer is, you know, let all beings be happy. Let no being suffer. In the Swasti Prajabhyas that we chant, if you go through the definition of the whole thing, you know, may all beings be happy. You know, may all beings be free of illness. You know, so may no being suffer. A lot of the commentaries you read in the beginning of the Hastamalakiya Bhashyam, which is a commentary by Shankara on these 10 verses of Hastamalaka, who is one of Shankara's disciples, starts with every being has this prayer. Every being wants this. Let me be happy. Let me not suffer. So it doesn't mean in what language you're expressing that in, or if it's in tree language or lizard language or dog language or our language, it's may I be happy, let me not suffer. You know? And so that's like an overarching desire, ahimsa, you know, non-injury. So what does non-injury mean? May in your presence, may I be happy, may not suffer. So I know that very well, how I felt, all of you. May in your presence, may I always feel happy, may I not suffer. Of course, we have to do it the opposite way too. That in my presence, may you always be happy and may you not suffer. That's a way of kind of really understanding kind of the golden rule in the Dharma. So this swarupa, this is not a passing thing. This is my comfort level is to feel whole and complete. That all is well with me. That's another way of defining what we mean by Ananda. You know? And so, in order for me to feel that way, since if I have Ajnanam, if I have self-ignorance, the only thing that really, in terms of my knowledge banks, that only gives me that appreciation, now all is well with me. Notice the now. now all is well with me. Let it last for some time anyway. What does it mean, now all is well with me? What is that feeling? It's not necessarily a bliss for a tea. It's a feeling of being myself, my unencumbered self. And what that means is that at that moment, at that time, my mind has a shantavritti, so the mind is not really participating in terms of any negative vrittis or any negative emotions. It's just very, it's at home. It's peaceful, you know. And so when the mind is like that, I feel whole and complete. So sometimes ananda is translated, as Swamiji will always often do this, not always, but often, as wholeness. You know, I feel whole, I feel complete. Let's use that as a translation of ananda. Now, so I'm going to use a few little prakriyas that we use around trying to make this appreciated, that how these ananda vrittis even take place. But before that, there's one that, you know, I love, and I even use this in therapy with my clients. I'll say something like, you know, in India they tell this story. I bring in things like that, you know, just not as a big unfoldment, but sometimes these illustrations, they have a lot of power, you know, and if an illustration, a drishtanta, is used in the right setting where you're pointing out something and then you tell a story, that story can make it really seen, really deeply appreciated. So it's a beautiful use of story and use of illustrations. So this is the water bucket story, the water bucket illustration. I don't know where Swamiji got water buckets. It doesn't have to be water buckets. He always used three water buckets, so we'll use that one. It could as well be, you know, a beautiful silent lake, you know, a tumultuous ocean, and a gutter water, you know, full of dirt. Could use just three bodies of water is what we're talking about. Let's use three buckets. So say the sun, bright sun, no clouds in the sky, the bright sun is illumining everything, including three buckets that are sitting there, you know. And so now, these three buckets are fine. They're all the same kind of bucket, and they're filled with the same amount of water. But one water, it's like one of our little kids or the dogs went and scuffed up some dirt and just dropped it in that bucket. Like, what if your little child saw all this dirt in this nice bucket and it just went, ah! Now, that's really nice and muddy. All right, nice, muddy. We've got a nice, muddy bucket there. Imagine the second bucket, you know, as being as if somebody was sitting there and going like this to it. You know, just shaking it back and forth and watching the water. The water's going like this, you know. It's having a great time. Look at that. Look at that. Look at what water does. Look at what water does. So the water's going like this, and this. And this other bucket is just left alone, just sitting there, just quietly. There's no ripples in it. There's no dirt in it. It is just abiding, right? So I've got the muddy water bucket. We've got the water full of the muddy water, and then the water full of all of these ripples. And then we've got the nice, quiet, silent, still water. Okay? Now the sun illumines all of these three buckets equally. Right? It doesn't say, you know, I like this bucket, I don't like this bucket. It has no preference whatsoever. And from its own standpoint, all three are equally warmed by its rays, by its warmth, and all three are equally illumined. Right? It's warmed and illumined equally. Okay? But the receiving entity, in this case the water, the muddy water, the agitated water, and the still water, are going to, being sattva, you know, being able to actually have the capacity to reflect the sun, are going to reflect it differently. Right? The sun, nothing's happening. The sun is fine. It's just casting its rays. But from the standpoint of these three water buckets, the muddy water bucket in its reflection of the sun is really depressing, because this sun's reflection of the sun, it has like no tejas. You know, it's not barely shining because of that one last lump. Like say if that last lump of dirt hadn't been thrown in, then it would still be rather depressed as though, not really able to reflect the sun. But the more muddy the water gets, the less able it is to reflect the sun, you know. And so its sense of sun from its own perspective, from the water, its sense of the sun is very muted. And so in reference to the sun, say it says, because of ajnanam, it doesn't realize that the sun that you are is here. It only recognizes the sun from the standpoint of its own condition. That's how it recognizes the sun. And from the standpoint of its own condition, it's just going to say, I feel so dull today. I don't have any energy, you know. It's like I just don't have any shine left to me at all, you know. And so that's the poor water. You know, it doesn't feel very happy with itself. Now say we go to the next bucket. And that bucket is really agitated. And then it's feeling jittery, you know. It's like its luminosity and its brightness and everything is fine, but it's just, you know, flashing all over the place. You can't sit still with that type of agitation. But the third water bucket, where the water is so clear, the nature of the reflection that water is enjoying is resonates with the sun itself. It's not the sun. But the nature of that reflection is true to the sun. We say that it is, it's the word that I usually use, it resonates. Its nature resonates with the sun. Agitated one is not comfortable. It doesn't really resonate with the sun. It's not a true reflection. And the worst one is the really muddy water, because that one really doesn't resonate with the sun. You feel totally isolated. They're going to feel isolated from their self, from their sun. And so this is a really beautiful analogy for me and my mind, where I am the sun. That's who I actually am. I am the sun. I am always the same. No matter what vritti is being illumined, it can be a depressed vritti, it can be an agitated vritti, it can be a very peaceful vritti. What happens to me, the sun, in reference to those vrittis? Zero. Zero. Nothing happens to the sun. It is illumining those vrittis, not even honestly recognizing that those vrittis are there. It's not affected by those vrittis whatsoever. From the standpoint of the vrittis, you know what I mean by vrittis, the thought modifications or the emotional, the thoughts that are there or the emotions are there, they're very affected because from their standpoint, mithya as they are, from their standpoint, they experience me, this conscious being that is me, the one that illumines them. It only experiences me through the lens of themselves, right? So the mind, having a muddy vritti, being a muddy vritti, a dark and depressed, it feels what it feels about me because it's experiencing me only through its lens, with that total superimposition taking place where it owns me, and whatever its condition is, I am. And so if this mind is muddy, if it's depressed, if it's dark, then I feel that way. This, not me, not the Atma, not me, but my mind feels that about me. It says, it, whatever its gunas are, whatever its qualities are, that's who I am. I am, right? I am, I exist, and I am aware of this. Such shit is fine, you know? Such shit is fine. The consciousness, the knownness, the existence is fine here. The problem is the ananda. So it says, I don't want, I was like, I don't want to exist like this. I don't even want to live. If I'm going to be this depressed, if this is how I'm going to be, I don't want to live anymore. You know, I'm absolutely miserable. I feel so alone. I feel so isolated. You know, I have no sense of wholeness. I have no sense of wholeness. You know, what's the use of living? In fact, people who have a major depressive disorder, you know, clinically, how because of the darkness and the depressed nature, the muddy water bucketness of their mind, you know, they do feel, I can't go on like this. I would rather die than go on like this, and I see no hope. These are actual shared symptoms of people who have a major depressive disorder, because the mind, for whatever reason, has caused this. It could be chemistry. Usually when it's a clinical depression, it is chemical. And so you're held underwater in that way, and you can't see out of it. And so you feel so depressed, you don't even want to go on. Because you, yourself, and this thought modification in the mind are taken to be one. There's no viveka there, right? There's just ajnanam. That mind reflects the self, but the self, it reflects, the mind reflects the self, but the mind, but the, if the mind is having some condition, like say for depression, then the depressed mind reflects the self, taking itself to be that mind, and it says, I am depressed, I am hurt, I am sorrowful. Whatever the condition of the mind is, myself is superimposed on that. There is no viveka. There's no sun there, recognizing myself as the sun shining down on these different conditions of the mind. Where there's a viveka then. I am me, and my mind is suffering in this way. There's a viveka, differentiation. This example is limited because the sun's way up there, and the water bucket's way down here. Whereas in this example, the satya mitya, like what is the distance between the desk and the wood? Or the pot and the clay. There's no distance. But the mitya contains a lot of things within itself, the maya, you know. A lot of things, including all of the emotions and all of the perceptions, are part of maya. And what is the relationship of maya to the self? Is satya mitya. That means that there's no distance. But the maya in its own world is very, very powerful. And so without the viveka between myself, you know, the wood and the desk, so to speak, without recognizing myself as I am, then this muddy water bucket, you know, is very hard to live with. Because in this muddy water bucket condition of my mind, who I am is not really reflected. My being, the existence, is reflected. I am depressed. Perfect. There's a perfect superimposition there. I am depressed. How do you know you're depressed? Oh, for heaven's sakes. Of course I know. I know I'm depressed. The satchit in perfect condition. But the affect of the mind, the quality, the emotion of the mind is very strong. And that emotion competes with my own nature. And the reason it competes with my own nature is that my nature, who I am, that whole, the wholeness of my being, is ever-present. Right? And so, because I am ever-present, no matter what the emotional state is of the water bucket mind, no matter what it is, I am always there. And it is the conditions of the mind that is changing. So I differentiate one mental condition from another, and from another, and from another. I am always there, so there's no question about that. I take myself totally for granted. And the emotional conditions, okay, say I have a depressed condition, an agitated, water buckety condition, I have a very calm, shantavritti condition, you know. Me, my presence, is always illumining and pervasive to all three of those conditions. And so I am taken for granted because I am the same in every condition, in every experience that I have. But the experiences are different. I'm not different. And so because I'm not different, I, my being is kind of like an example that we use sometimes. I'm kind of like, my being is kind of like, I'm kind of like the water that a fish is swimming in. The fish is not noticing the water because wherever it looks, the water is there. So the water's totally taken for granted. You know? And the beauty, the coolness, the beauty of the water, all that. No, that's just my condition. It's because it's never any different. The fish is only going to notice the differences, not the thing that is always the same. And so this is kind of the one of the problems that we have, especially when we get into the ananda, you know. Even in terms, just think it like this, even in terms of the sat-chit and the ever-changing contents, the ever-changing different types of thoughts and perceptions that they have, they're continually changing. What do I notice? I don't notice me, the one who is always there like the sun, illumining, being the conscious being, the sat and chit, because of which all of these conditions are known. I don't notice that because it's always exactly the same. I just notice all of the changes. And then sometimes I like these things that I'm experiencing. And sometimes I don't like these things that I'm experiencing. Sometimes I love these things that I'm experiencing. Now, that's interesting because it's true that in all of these experiences, I am always there, always the same. That's something I also don't notice because I'm only experiencing myself through the vrittis. But nevertheless, in terms of the knownness of the vrittis, of all of my experiences, I can say, yeah, this is known, this is known, this is known, this is known. In terms of the existence of all of my experiences, this exists, this exists, this exists, even though I don't notice it as a noun, I'm not going to say this exists more than this. No, they all exist. They all are known. But they're not all happy. Only some of the experiences that I have are happy. And those are the experiences I love. So you have to see the problem here. There's I am there the same in all of the experiences. The vrittis themselves, in terms of the sat-chit, this is known, this is known, this is known, there really is no problem. They don't get in my way at all. They're just perceptions. But then some perceptions, some experiences make me happy. And some don't. So, because I've experienced everything from the standpoint of the vritti, I also experience some happiness and sadness in reference to the vritti. It's always through the vritti. So not only do they have this objective sat-chit experiences, I also categorize my experiences into raga and dvesha and indifference. Depending upon how these experiences correlate with my experience of happiness. You know? You have to correlate. And we can do an interesting anvayavyatireka here. When this is, that is. When this is not, that is. That still is. You know. How to do that? Let me see. It can be tricky, because remember in the anvayavyatireka, there has to be a positive and negative correlation for the two to be, you know. So let's just do the anvayavyatireka for a minute in terms of happiness. In any given moment, say someone makes me happy, right? Someone says something nice to me, they fall in love with me, or I fall in love with them, so it becomes really, wow, you know. That's really charged then. Yeah. So, we have to go like this. When this person is, I am happy. But now the question is, when this person is, I am happy, does that mean Every time I see this person, I am happy. Because right now when this person is, I am happy. So now this person stands for any person, any object really, but this person, when this person is, I am happy. And you say, yeah, that is true. But then the next question is, when this person is, you know, are you always happy? Like, for instance, say, tomorrow, when this person is, will you be happy? And what about the next day when this person is? Because they will be, if providing we're not going to have them die off yet. Yeah. So assuming they're alive. So when this person is, I am happy. You know, they are my source of happiness. They are my source of ananda, my source of love. And I say, just based on your experience, you know, well, will they be that tomorrow, do you think? Then what you say is, like, I really hope so. Well, what would stop them? What would stop them from being? What would stop that person from being your source of happiness tomorrow? Because right now when they are happy, when, you know, when they are there, you are happy. When this person is, I am happy. Right? So as long as they are, then you have to say, well, no, it doesn't work quite like that. It's just to refine it a little bit. When this person is acting in this particular way toward me, then they are my source of happiness. So I guess if they would act in another way, they might not be my source of happiness. So then it's, when this person is behaving in this particular way toward me, then I am happy. Then another interesting thing is, okay, so now when this person is behaving in this particular way toward me, they are my source of happiness. Then I'd say, well, that means that whenever they are acting like that, you will be happy. Whenever they act in that way toward you, you will be happy. Is that correct? And then you think about that for a minute, and then you say, well, I have to feel like it, you know. I mean, it has to be at the right time. They have to act that way toward me when I'm in the mood for that, because I might actually want to be doing something else, and then they're giving me all of this wonderful, loving attention, and they want to be with me, but, you know, I'm really busy, and I actually, you know, want to go to my room and shut the door and lie down and read my books. That's all I want to do. I don't want any... I don't want anybody at this time. Okay? So this is just our life. We don't really think about it. Still, you know, when this person is, I am happy. But that isn't actually our experience. So Swamiji, and there's another thing about that. So in a minute I'll tell Swamiji's famous story. The other problem is that if this person, when this person is, you know, there, like then when the sun is, the day is, when this person is, I am happy. So then this person becomes my source. He's the source of happiness. But is he a source of happiness? Or is he my source of happiness? Because I don't notice other people necessarily turning toward him to get their happiness. They're not necessarily turning toward him at all or even noticing him. And in fact, I notice over in the corner there, someone who doesn't even like that person. And so while that person is at this particular moment the source of happiness for me, he's not the source of happiness for you. You're indifferent. And then there's a person over there who actually doesn't like my source of happiness and actually feels miserable. At the same time that that person is making me very happy, there's over in the corner there, there's somebody who that same person is making very, very sad, and then there's a whole bunch of people who could absolutely don't notice that person at all. So what does this say, actually, is that all of these ragas, I want this so that I can be happy, when you start analyzing, you know, that this, whatever it is, you have projected that happiness on it sometimes or at one time. And that projection can change. that same person can be a source of your unhappiness at another time, and at another time, he or she is a garage sale item. Time for this person to go now. Yeah. we have no more use for this person. Garage sale item. It's kinder to talk about that in reference to objects, but in reference to people, but since in fact anything that we have can objectify in the universe actually has nothing whatsoever to do with our experience of ananda. There is not one thing in this universe, in this Maya, that is a carrier of ananda. Because if it was an ananda carrier, whenever that person came around, I would be beamed with their ananda. They are the source of ananda. That's what they are. Whenever they come around, I will experience the ananda. And so will you. It's not about time. I will always be happy in your presence because you are the happiness. And so in your presence, I get to enjoy that happiness. And since you are the happiness, I will always enjoy the happiness from you. But so will everybody else, because Mr. or Mrs. Happiness is walking around, and whoever, you know, it gets a glance, a drishti of them. Drishti means just like a sidelong glance in the Advaita Makaranda. There's just through the side of their eyes, you know, they glance upon you, they see you, and you become happy. Zoom, zoom, zoom. And there will be no indifference whatsoever. But that isn't our experience at all. So there's a lot of nice stories about this that Swamiji makes them up. He makes these stories up, and then everybody will never forget them because they're so outrageous in their own simple way. So Swamiji's famous story about this is, just imagine you're going to go to a party. You're going to a party, really looking forward to it, you know, and, you know, 30 people, 40 people of your close friends of your whole sangha, your whole group is going to be there. You're all your people, or maybe the people that you work with. And so this party is in a really nice, beautiful place. And so you go to the party, and you're seeing all of your friends, and you're having a great time, you know, and talking and, you know, just enjoying being together with people that you usually don't get to have together in one big group. So everything is great. There's no problem until old Mr. X walks in to the party. And he is just another guy. He's simply another guy. He's walked into the party and everything is continuing as, everything is normal, no problem. And then this one woman who had come into the party, glances over and sees him entering. So you see, she sees him and she thought, oh my God. I would never have come here if I knew he was coming. It's my ex partner. You know. I would never put myself through this. Why didn't anybody tell me? Why didn't they tell me? How am I gonna sneak out of here? How am I going to sneak out of here? And she feels the whole party is shot, you know, because this person has come. And it's too much pain, you know. And so her nice, happy time has, like that, become a really stressful, really sad, sad time. And so she's planning her escape. And over on the other side of the room, there's this guy's new girlfriend. And she sees him and she goes, oh, come here. I'm here. She's so happy. This guy's come. Okay, she's so happy. And he sees her and he makes his way over there. And they're chatting and talking and having a great time. Of course, there's, you know, 30, 40 other people in the room who could care less. I mean, if they didn't even notice this person, they don't notice this woman, they don't notice this woman. It's all totally irrelevant. They don't have a clue what's going on, but there's this thing happening. Okay, so she's miserable. She's so happy. Everything is going on fine. They're carriers of this sukha and dukkha. We've got the Sukha-Dukha carriers. Okay. Then she wants a drink. And he says, let me go get you one. So he's going to make his way over to the table where all of the hors d'oeuvres and all of the drinks are. So he makes his way and turns around, and as he's making his way, he glances and he sees his ex-wife. And so when he sees the ex-wife, he has a totally different reaction. He doesn't have this negative reaction. He thinks, wow, there she is. And he starts having all positive remembrances, you know. And really just thinking about the good times, and actually they've been through hell together. But now, now he's remembering, you know, these happy circumstances. So he thinks, I'm just going to go say hi. And as he walks up to her, she notices he's coming, and he kind of looks how he used to look when he actually cared about me, you know. And she starts to feel differently also, you know. And so then he makes his way over, and he said, you look so nice. I've just been thinking about you, and it's so good to see you. You know, I just feel connected, like we used to be connected. Not in any way that I want to get together. He didn't mean that. I just feel connected, and it's so nice. And she also kind of dropped her thing, her guard. And she was so happy just to not feel all of that tension, all of that pain, you know. And so they're both chatting away, and the angst and the horrible thing is just not there anymore. They're just having a nice conversation. But now this woman, who is so happy, looks over and glances at him having a nice time, a nice conversation, and she thinks, oh no, is he going to get back with her? This is all normal, believe me. This is not anything that, and this is samsara. This is not anybody's, some unusual person's experience. This is everybody's experience. So in one way or another, you all have your samsara story to tell. Okay? And so then she starts to feel worried. So now she's getting really unhappy. And this one's really unhappy. And then different people are still totally indifferent. They have no clue what's going on at all, you know. And then this guy also probably doesn't have a clue what's going on, because, as usual, I can't resist it. Oh, you guys are so great. But I can't resist it. No, but that's not part of the story. Part of this, the story is that he probably very well may not know at all, because in truth, he's not a carrier of sukha or dukkha, of either. He's not a carrier of the pain. He's not a carrier of the pleasure. Neither. No. If he were, then this one would be happy all the time, or sad all the time. This one would be happy all the time, or sad all the time. Whatever is, he's a carrier of. And in fact, the whole room, Ananda has walked into the room. That's like God himself has come. You know, we're all happy. We all get that hit. We don't want him to leave. You know? Or say he was a carrier of dukkha. Oh no, dukkha is coming into the room. No, it's not like that. The reality is, sometimes with one person, with one object, we are happy, sad, sorrowful, indifferent. You know? It changes. They are not a carrier of anything, actually. Sometimes the one person who is our beloved makes us so happy. You know, sometimes we want to tear our hair out. You know, sometimes it's so frustrating. And sometimes, well, everything's fine. They're just what they are. That's fine. No problem. Yeah. Even your most beloved children are my little dogs. And those are my children. My little doggies. Okay. Sometimes they're so, the kids are so beautiful, so wonderful. Swamiji once said, Bhagavan made them like that. Because if you get frustrated, the mother's always 24/7, so sometimes you're going to be totally exhausted. You barely can go on. It's too much. I'm so tired, I can't even open my eyes. Only women know this. But that's not true either. I'm so exhausted, I can't even open my eyes. I just need to lie down. And then your little baby gives you this smile. This smile that's all just this little smile. And your everything changes. That's what Swamiji Bhagavan. Bhagavan made them cute like that. So that your heart would just continue to melt. You know? Just continue to melt. So even no matter how exhausted you are, you can't go on, you can't even move your body anymore. And then everything clears up. Yeah. So this, you know, we have beginningless time, we are projecting sukha and dukkha onto innocent sources. Literally. Innocent sources because they're not carriers. No one. Not even the whole. No one is a carrier. Not even Ishwara is a carrier of sukha and dukkha. The sukha and dukkha are responses to my projection of myself, of the ananda, of the wholeness of myself, onto whatever it is that is lighting up for me. Whatever it is that lights up for me, I want that so I can be happy. That becomes to me my source of sukha. And so when I don't get it, if it's not behaving toward me in the way that it's supposed to, that source of sukha, which is a projection, becomes a source of dukkha. You know? And then when that object or thing starts, if it's in just the right environment and we're both in sync, then I experience sukha. And so I am continually, as a jiva, as an ajnani, I am continually experiencing the world giving me sukha and dukkha based upon my raga dvesha, based upon how people and things and situations and workplace, etc., are behaving in the world. That's what gives me my sukha and dukkha. But is that what it gives me, really? That's how I take it, like this person is giving me sukha, this person's giving me dukkha. Is that true? So no, it's not true. Because if they were the source of sukha, then they would just be giving it to you all the time by their nature. It isn't true. If they were the source of dukkha, they would be making you and everybody else miserable at all times. They're Mr. and Mr. Dukkha and Mrs. Sukha and whatever. They're walking around. Influencing everybody positively. This, we know that is not true. But then the question is, where is this sukha located? What causes the experience of sukha, of wholeness, of well-being? Because unlike the sat-chit, it is known. You don't have that with sukha. It's not like, it is ananda. That one doesn't work. So in the analysis of ananda, of the sat-chit ananda, we need to understand something differently. You know? And what needs to be understood differently is what is the psychodynamics, really, of your experience of this sukha and dukkha. What is going on there to allow you that experience of sukha that we'll call vritti ananda? It has to do with the state of vritti, the state of mind. And what state of mind will give you a sukha experience? Well, the best example, I think, is just to realize that whenever you fulfill a desire, I want this so that I can be happy, I want this and so that I can be happy, and you get it. At that moment, the mind is desireless. When you fulfill a desire, the desire is fulfilled now. So now you have no desire, right? You're a Mahatma. Your mind has no desire. You're desireless. That is a Shantavritti. That Shantavritti is like the clear water bucket. So every Shantavritti, what gives you these Shantavrittis? The fulfillment of the desire, of a desire to have a moment of shared love with my partner or with my child or with my family or with my friends, that moment of shared love. Shantavritti. You know? What happens when I have a Shantavritti? Like the clear water bucket, my mind, the condition of my mind resonates with my own being. And I feel like myself. I feel at home. I feel whole. I feel complete because the mind is not getting in my way. It's just like the clear water. It doesn't compete at all with my nature, as opposed to a mind that has not getting your way and then feels so afraid, so worried, so despondent. That mind is like has become very tense and tight and agitated, and it doesn't really reflect the sun much at all. And so in that mental condition, you feel isolated, alone. If you're really agitated, you feel irritated and agitated. All of these things are just stress. The mind is in a state of stress, you know. It's in a state of tension. And that mental condition does not resonate well with my own being. And so my own being, the wholeness itself, is now being viewed through this stress. And so that stress competes with the ananda, the fullness, the wholeness of my being. And so what do you say? From the standpoint of the stressed mind, you say, I, your being is fine, the existence of yourself is fine, but this state of mind does not resonate with me. And so, you know, I can say, like, I feel so isolated, I feel unloved, I feel not cared for, I feel not wanted. These are all the negatives, the opposite of your own swarupa, of your own nature. You feel isolated from yourself. And so this roller coaster ride of sukha-dukha, with indifferences thrown in between, is actually quite unavoidable in samsara. As long as this, I need this to be in a particular way, of course, in order to be happy. I need these conditions in order to be happy. You know, and so your well-being becomes dependent upon this ever-changing universe, ever-changing people, to be behaving in a particular way, in a particular context, which allows your mind to feel at peace. All is well with me. And how long can that last? Because there is no person that isn't continually changing. There's no situation that's not continually changing. And you yourself are continually changing too. So to get all of these things lined up properly, where this is what you want and this is what you get, you know. To get it, that's like, you know, in the slot machine when you get the three apples or something. You pull it and you pull it and pull it out. Then the three apples are there and all the coins come running down and all the lights go off. You know, it's like playing the slot machine. Because nobody's going to stop. Nothing in the creation is going to stop. And so it's nothing stops, including your own desires and the continual movement of everybody else and all of their desires. So it's nothing's going to just stop and freeze frame for you. That's not going to happen. That's why we call these moments of happiness like the 15-second samadhi. 15 seconds, maybe. 15 seconds before feeling so happy and so pleased and so wonderful. But then another thought arises. Yeah, but what about this? You know, I mean, 15 seconds could be less, could be a little bit more, but it's not for very long. Before the next thought, either the next thought, questioning thought arises, it dampens down the ananda a little bit. You know, or the needing. I used to notice this, that oh, that's good, but gosh, I also need this. Mm-hmm. That used to be one that I would have quite a bit. Yeah, this is great. This is wonderful. But then this little thought would rise up. You have to get this too, you know, just to make it complete. So I always have to add this, we have to add this, and we have to add this little thing. If there's a constant in samsara, it's a constant balancing act. Just watch your mind in terms of this. There's a constant balancing act to find yourself, create a situation and manipulate a situation in such a way that you can have a shantavritti. So the liberation in all of this search for ananda and moksha is when I recognize that that is what is happening, and that I'm in dependent on these, what they call these little leshes of ananda, these little whiffs of ananda, little tiny, you know, crumbs of ananda. I'm totally dependent on that because I'm totally dependent on my vrittis being a particular way. When the ocean of ananda, you know, is always there as my own being. But my mind is on such a roller coaster ride because of searching for it in the world. You know, it seems to come and go. The existence doesn't come and go in terms of my experience of the world. The consciousness, the knownness doesn't come and go. But the ananda comes and goes. And so, in order that this recognition in terms of really gaining moksha is probably the trickiest, because I have to, in a sense, give up this vritti ananda, because it's just a vritti. That is not moksha. Having a good vritti, you know, and having, you know, dharma and freedom from raga dvesha, so I have really a lot of shanta vrittis, then I can say, okay, now I'm free because I have a predominance of shanta vrittis. With a jnani, it's not that that's not true. There is a predominance of shanta vrittis because you're not asking anything of the creation. But they're still time bound. You're still management involved for their shanta vrittis. You're still a product. Vrittis come and go, come and go, and come and go. That's not moksha. Moksha is the recognition of your own nature differentiated from all the vrittis. Yourself differentiated from all the vrittis means that you recognize the ananda, the wholeness of your being, is not subject to time. It's like existence is not, my being is not subject to time. My consciousness is not subject to time. Ananda, wholeness also is not subject to time. Now, when we're doing some of these meditations that we do, like working on a little bit on ananda now, and also working on this type of differentiation, practicing the recognition of your own presence, well, all this other stuff is happening. Recognizing that nothing is happening to you. And in fact, from your own standpoint, these things don't even exist. They exist from their standpoint, depending upon your Satchitananda, the Satchitananda. They depend on the Satchitananda. So from their standpoint, they are, they exist, they shine. Because the self is, it exists, it shines. And they are not away from that. So when they are there, they exist, they shine. You know, the whole creation is like that. But from my standpoint, so if you just be with yourself, you can ask yourself, let the buddhi ask yourself, am I right now, just from my own being, from my own standpoint, do I know anything? Is there anything else? You hear these things in the, you know, like sometimes they call them little sparks of a fire. You know, this little butterfly is floating here, this little butterfly is floating here, the sparks of a fire. But from your own standpoint, there's only your being. And then you notice, you ask, am I ananda? Am I beloved? Or am I sad? Or what am I? And just you notice, what is your own nature? How can you even be happy just to be? How can you be happy and not even need any of this? Why is that? And is that true? You have to sit there for that and recognize, yeah, I'm absolutely complete in myself. The presence or absence of the creation is not relevant to my wholeness. That's the ananda. It's not a blissvritti or anything. It's the absolute completeness of my being to the point where the creation is, in a sense, irrelevant. Not from us within the creation, but from the standpoint of myself, the wholeness or the completeness of my own being does not require anything else. And as you sit with yourself, you just recognize that fact. So that's some of our ananda story. Mm-hmm. It'll come around, though. I'm going to leave it now because we're going to go into something else, but it'll come back.
Shanti Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah.